I will have G. Bush joining us from 3 to 6, though. So here's how it's going to work. First hour, it's me and you. And I laid it out. I'm like, G. Bush will be on for 3 hours starting from 3 to 6. You guys figure it out from there. 6 o'clock then, I'll be back solo. We'll have Coach Riz pop in and out. And we'll have some guests along the way as well. We have Jake Murrin on site. We have Jax Gregory. I'm the board. Yes. We also have, I believe it's Katie Pollock doing updates as well. I think I heard her voice today as we've been in Berea. And this is my first day out at training camp this year because I wasn't here Friday. I was in Boston. And then I wasn't here Monday. So the first day. It is incredibly hot out here. It is in a much better spot, I want to say, than we had been in previous years, though. But more importantly, and I don't know if Jake's tweeted it out yet from our afternoon drive account, I have made peace with all the mascots. I've been telling Nick for how long. I'm good with the mascots. It's just the mascots typically aren't good with me here. And, you know, Brownie the Elf made a point to come on over, hang out with me for a little bit. And he's a mascot, so he doesn't say much. But he made a point to hang out. And I feel like if there was bread that could have been broke, we would have done it. We would have done it right there. So I thought all day long, though, I thought to myself, I am going to go in on the Emmanuel Clase situation. And we will. I promise you that. 3 o'clock when G. Bush gets in, because for some reason, when G. Bush joins me, it just happens to coincide with when you have Guardians players getting suspended and having problems. Like, I don't know why that's happening, but it's happening. But when Jimmy Haslam decided to speak, that's when we decided to shift plans, because Jimmy Haslam doesn't speak all the time. You get it a handful of times. You don't get it every day. You don't get it once a week like you do with the Guardians and Antonetti and Chernoff. You get it occasionally. But the question I have for you guys to start off here, and this is where I want to go, is whether or not Jimmy is starting to rewrite his narrative. And I was thinking about this in the volume and the amount of times that Jimmy doesn't make himself available relative to some of the other owners. 31 teams in the NFL, and then a television producer is how it was described for Jerry Jones yesterday by a national sports talk host. 31 teams in the NFL and a television producer. Typically, when it comes to Jimmy Haslam and the conversation around Haslam, people then default back to this idea that he's basically Jerry Jones light. He is not Jerry Jones. And I think the reason why is never more evident than when you listen to him speak today and you talk about the lack of the amount of times that he speaks. Yes, he made some news today. There's no question. We will get to him talking about giving Andrew Berry credit for drafting Shedeur Sanders and trying to get himself a little bit further away from being responsible for that decision. We will talk about that. We will discuss those type of things because he did make some splashes. But it was in hearing him talk for 25 minutes today, and you heard that entire whole press conference on Baskin and Phelps, it's never more obvious why he's not Jerry Jones. It's never more obvious why he's not one of these television producers, why he's not one of these guys, these owners that are trying to make it all about themselves, that are trying to make themselves the star of the show. And I know there's a certain amount of you guys that are listening being like, Jonathan, why are you carrying water for Jimmy Haslam? First off, I'm not. My paycheck doesn't have a Browns logo in the top right corner. I don't have to do such a thing. If there's anybody to be accused of that, it can't be me. But the point is, when you hear him talk today and you hear him discuss in a 25-minute press conference, there was one thing that stood out even above the Shedeur Sanders comment, and that was the fact that the press conference was 14 minutes on the stadium. In a 25-minute press conference, more of it than not was related to stadium questions, was related to how the stadium is being built, what is the new developments around the stadium, is he fighting with Mayor Bibb, is he not fighting with the city of Cleveland, what is he doing here, what is he doing there, and I think that's incredibly interesting. The difference in Jerry Jones and Jimmy Haslam is what happened in that press conference today. But here's where I think there might be a little bit of a wrinkle. I think it's okay to say he's closer to James Dolan than he is Jerry Jones. And that might be the line that we have to go ahead and figure out. James Dolan, in charge of the Knicks, has been for a very long time. And for a very long time, the Knicks have been in the toilet. And you think to yourself, well, the Knicks were just in the Eastern Conference Finals. Yes, they were. The Knicks were a very good team this last season. Why was that? Well, for the past couple years, Dolan was in charge of something called the Sphere in Las Vegas. I'm sure you've seen it on TikTok. I'm sure you've seen some videos of it. If you haven't, what it is it's basically like a psychedelic venue. It's a wild place to have Grateful Dead. Kenny Chesney, I think, was there. Like, all these different acts come in, and it's this massive video board, and they have emojis that do smiley faces on the outside. So when you're playing the Wynn golf course, not that I'm playing that, but when you're playing the Wynn golf course, you see it from a distance. Like, that's what that is. And for the previous 2.5, 3 years, James Dolan was in charge of the sphere. He had his eyes set on other prizes. He had his attention towards other things. And what was interesting about that is that for about 2.5, 3 years, once they got their head coach in there in Thibodeau, they started to have some consistency. Thibodeau was in charge for 5 years in New York, but they started to have some consistency. They started to make some right moves. It wasn't just the idea that they got Jalen Brunson to pop off. It was the idea that they traded for Mikal Bridges. They made the big trade for Karl Anthony Towns to get rid of Julius Randle, and they made a bunch of different moves, and it was all done with the idea that, hey, who's in charge there gets to actually make those decisions? You don't have someone hovering over you. You don't have someone breathing down your neck. You don't have an owner trying to do this and that. And the reason why they were able to get away with it is because Dolan was focused on other entities. He was more focused on making the Sphere awesome than he was making the New York Knicks awesome. And you're like, well, Jonathan, where are you going with this? I think you can connect the dots. What I'm surmising here is the idea that the reason why the Browns, although they have not had much success last year, the reason why there's been some continuity, why there's been consistency, and why the front office and head coach haven't changed is because Jimmy Haslam's been focused on the stadium more than he's been focused on the football team. And it was never more obvious in watching him dance around questions around the football team to then focus back to what he knows best and what he knows the most of, the business side of how that stadium gets built and what that stadium's impact could be. It just makes complete sense. Now, the worry I have, as you heard him today say, basically, that fight is over. They won that battle. They got the stadium they want. They're going to be breaking ground on it soon. They're going to be moving dirt in all sorts of different places. Everything under the sun that he said in that final 15 minutes of his press conference, I wonder if the moment that he starts to separate himself from the stadium and all the attention that that took, if he then gets his hand back in the cookie jar when it comes to some of the conversations around the football team. Because you can only stay in conversation with that for so long. You know, just like the Dolans, the moment James Dolan came back into the picture with the Knicks, what happened there? They fired Tom Thibodeau. They went on one of the more embarrassing coaching searches we've seen in, the previous 25 years of coaching searches. Like, it was about as bad as it could possibly get. And the Knicks and Knicks fans right now are worried that Dolan's going to be back involved more than ever. I mean, I have defended Haslam time and time again when people like Mike Florio have come on this radio station and made the suggestion that you're never going to win as long as Haslam's here. Because for the previous couple years, I did think to myself, Haslam's been distracted. Haslam's been away. And maybe I was wrong in the first assumption in thinking it was the Columbus Crew and thinking it was the the Milwaukee Bucks, thinking it was owning all these different sports franchises. Maybe I was wrong in that assumption. Maybe it was just the stadium the entire time. But you can't argue with the idea that the past couple years, Jimmy Haslam's been singing a different tune, and Jimmy Haslam's been trying to take himself away from a lot of the conversations that people have been trying to offer up on him. And so this was Jimmy today, as he continues, I feel like, to try to move himself away from being the centerpiece, being the anti-Jerry Jones. As he's building Jimmy World, he's trying to be the anti-Jerry Jones, not have himself so involved in the football decisions and letting football people make football decisions. He then moved it towards whether or not he was there when it came to making the call on Shedeur Sanders. This was the owner of the Browns, Jimmy Haslam, earlier today.
Yeah, listen, we have good process, okay? And if you'd have told me, let's see, we picked him on Saturday, right? Friday night driving home, y'all are going to pick Shedeur, I would say that's not happening. But we had a conversation early that morning, and then we had a conversation later that day. I think we had the right people involved in the conversation. At the end of the day, that's Andrew Berry's call. Andrew made the call to pick Shedeur. Just like who's going to start or what play we're going to call is Kevin's call. But that's Andrew's call. He made the call.
I think this was important, and I think this is part of a couple different things. I don't think it's just Jimmy trying to give credit to Andrew Berry for what right now seems like a pretty spectacular pick, all things considered. I think this is Jimmy trying to tell everybody, the Mike Florios of the world that came on this station and said it was all him that made the call, I think he's trying to tell everyone, like, hey, that wasn't me. That wasn't my decision. That, in fact, was Andrew Berry's. 216-474-0092. Can Jimmy Haslam rewrite his narrative? The narrative out there right now is that he's too controlling, that he's too involved with the team, that he's too this and he's too that. He's Jerry Jones light, and I'm looking at it, and I just don't see it that way right now, guys. Now, the worry I would have in all of these discussions is that, like James Dolan, he enters back into the equation because he got the stadium built and he got the stadium to where he needs it to be, and he's done arguing with the mayor of Cleveland, and he's done having all those discussions discussions about the stadium, and now we can just lock back into football and what's on the field. That would be the concern. But what's interesting is on draft night, when the Browns took Shedeur Sanders, I remember hearing through the grapevine essentially what Jimmy just told you right there, that it was Andrew Berry's call. Because I'm texting people. I'm always trying to figure out what's going on and what's happening. And I remember hearing through the grapevine, Jimmy had nothing to do with it. It was all Andrew Berry. Andrew Berry made the call. And this was, by the way, while that one image that went extremely viral was still in the process of going viral, where Stefanski and Berry look like hostages as they're making the call of taking Shedeur Sanders in the fifth round, while all that's still going on, I'm looking at the text messages that I'm receiving as they're telling you what Jimmy just told you in that little clip right there, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't buy it. I'm thinking to myself, there's no chance he didn't have his hand in that. There's no chance the showman that he is, the guy that loves attention, the guy that knows that if the Browns are part of the conversation piece, and this is where I'd relate it back to Jerry a little bit, and that what Jerry knows in 25 years, all they've had is losing football teams, haven't made it to a conference title game in 25 years, a quarter decade, and they're the most valuable franchise in the sport for a reason. Because people talk about him 24-7, people discuss him 24-7, that's it. And I think Jimmy understands that part of this game as well. Have people talk about the Browns, have people discuss the Browns. What does Shedeur Sanders bring? A lot of eyeballs in the first 3 months of him being here. A lot of conversations around the Browns that wouldn't normally exist. These things are all true. They're all true. And Jimmy knows that. And so that's why I was hesitant to begin with on this. But I think I had to wave the white flag. I think I just got to admit it. I think Jimmy is not only rewriting his narrative for the time being, but I genuinely do believe him when he says that was Andrew Berry's call and not his. But maybe I'm just the sucker at the poker table right now. 216-474-0092. Can Jimmy Haslam rewrite his narrative? And why is Jimmy giving Berry credit for Shedeur? We'll also get to a couple more things that the owner had to say today, including knocking down something that I think will make a lot of Browns fans upset. It's Afternoon Drive. Jonathan Peterlin with you guys. G. Bush joins us at 3 right here on The Fan. Practice is going on right now, and I'm sweating bullets out here, but we're out here. If you're out here, don't, you know, feel free to say hi. Don't be shy about it all. But we have Coach Riz joining us later on in the show. We have G. Bush joining us in about 40 minutes, quick hits in about 20 minutes. But we're talking about Jimmy Haslam and that comment right there, and wondering why is Jimmy giving Andrew Berry credit for Shedeur. 216-474-0092, and whether or not Jimmy's actually trying to just rewrite his narrative. And I think that's the bigger message here. Again, I was pretty adamant in just thinking about things rationally on draft night, whether or not Jimmy Haslam had any say in Shedeur Sanders. And yes, you co-op it with that viral photo where it looks like Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry want nothing to do with taking Shedeur Sanders. You co-op that with all the information that we believed about Jimmy Haslam in being Jerry Jones light, etc., where he wants to turn this into a show. Like if you think about him, and when you think about Jerry Jones, you think about somebody that is like a great showman that cares about the conversation around the Cowboys more than he cares about what actually happens with the Cowboys. I think they get an A-plus in many, many ways when it comes to the Cowboys, except for the actual on-field product. And I think for years, I think people have been asking themselves, will Jimmy move away from having so much say in the football decisions? And I feel like on draft night, I put it on him. On draft night, I did. I thought to myself, I'm getting text all over everywhere, people telling me that Jimmy didn't have any say in the Shedeur Sanders decision, and I just didn't believe it. Just to be honest with you, I didn't believe it. But I didn't think about the big picture around Jimmy Haslam and what currently exists right now around Jimmy. And I think it was never more evident than in that press conference. As you heard him, he interrupted Dee multiple times as she was trying to make a point about the stadium and building the stadium to be like, well, actually, to his wife in that moment. It was odd. But he's like, well, actually, and then goes on like a 7-point rant talking about different things about the stadium. Well, you can hear what people spend their time in based off of what they actually sound like they have excitement for. Like, for instance, you can tell I spend a lot of time talking and discussing about the Cleveland Browns because every time I talk about them, which is often in my life, but I have high energy. I'm excited by it. I think there's a lot of fun with it. Like, I was in Boston this past weekend, and a lot of my my father-in-law's side of the family, they're very educated people, and they want to talk a lot of politics, which is fine. That happens in 2025. But I was like, you know what? Not that interested in this conversation. Like, this is not for me. I like sports. I'm not as political. I can dabble in those waters, but I'm not as political. And so I was like, it's fine. And I just kind of like sat there and ate my food, and it wasn't really a big deal. But you can tell. You can tell what people are interested in. And Jimmy in this press conference was interested in the stadium convo. Think about how quick he was to just be like, yeah, that was Jimmy. Jimmy's decision. Hey, we have a good process. Anybody want to ask me about what's happening at Brook Park? Anybody want to ask me about what's going on? Can we talk about Jimmy Land? Can we talk about the what are they calling it? Pound Town is a joke. Can we talk about the shopping centers and the shopping malls? Which makes sense. He's a business guy. Yes, he's a football owner, but he's a business guy. He should have a lot more sense into what's happening there as opposed to anything else. So I thought it was really, really interesting that Jimmy's giving Barry credit for Shedeur Sanders, and I think it goes for a couple different reasons. If there was ever a time to try to latch onto I get credit for Shedeur Sanders, it would have been this press conference right now. There'll be more times down the line if Shador's awesome at football to try to take credit for it. I promise you that. But I thought it was really interesting that Jimmy tried to, today, in a day where Shedeur went 9 for 9 yesterday in practices, didn't have a ball touch the ground, threw a couple touchdown passes, was basically awesome by every metric and every measurement that you can have for one of these things, which isn't that many, by the way, but it was basically awesome out of every eye test you could possibly tell and everything else. He didn't come out there and gloat about taking Shedeur Sanders. He didn't come out gloating about the value that Shedeur offers. No, he's like, that was Andrew Berry. Now, this is a double-edged sword. This works both ways. You know, like I talk about Dolan in New York getting back involved into the team and how now all of a sudden they have the worst coaching search in NBA history. This can go a couple different ways. The idea that he was, in my opinion, over the past couple years, not as involved as he used to be, and definitely taking a step back as he was focused on the stadium project. Well, think about some of the reaction to that. Stefanski and Barry then have a longer leash. There's a reason why we're entering year 6 and they've got one playoff win. You can fast forward this thing if he doesn't pay enough attention to it and pays too much attention to the stadium and wake up one day and we're 10 years in and Stefanski and Barry both still have one playoff win and we got nothing to show for a decade of work. It's a very realistic possibility that could happen. That's why people like myself continue to harp on the idea that you have to have actual winning seasons. You can't just seem like you're winning games and seem like you're doing things, the process is right, and seem like you're doing everything on the up and up. You have to actually do it. And Jimmy, to his credit today, Jimmy spoke to what a disaster last season actually was. All right, we'll get that clip for you guys in just a second here. 216-474-0092. On Twitter, there you can find me. I am at Jay Peterlin. Basically, what the clip was Jimmy calling it a disaster in his own words, which I thought was scathing, which I thought was interesting, and I didn't see coming, all things considered. All right, let's go to that clip. Here was Jimmy Haslam earlier today.
You know, we made the decision last year to take a step back after last year's disaster and looking at our roster and knowing that we needed a quarterback to do this over a 2 or 3 year period. You know, it's too early to say, but we like our rookie group. We'll know a lot more, you know, after we play 2 or 3 exhibition games. The young guys get to play a lot, but we like the group, and particularly if Q can come back, we like it a lot.
And we'll see. We'll see what exactly he does like. Instead of understanding the man, they turn him into Wile E. Coyote. You know, a cartoon to be laughed at. And I get that. I do. I understand it. But we'll see in 2, 3, 4 years how much patience he actually has. Now, like the Dolans in New York, though, I do wonder if all of a sudden it hits the fan and he doesn't have the stadium to focus in on, well, where his attention's going to actually be. That's why I thought it was interesting. So over the past week and a half or so, a lot of the conversation has fallen back into Arch Manning and whether or not the Browns would be interested in an Arch Manning-Nick Saban conversation. Colin Cowherd started talking about it. We talked about it last week as well. And you can see like something like that would get Jimmy enough excited past the stadium operations, past the stadium and the building and everything, and just purely from a football standpoint. Peyton, obviously, with the relationship in Tennessee, the close connection to the state of Tennessee that the Manning family has, to bring Arch Manning to the Browns, you'd have to think he'd be interested in such a thing. Well, this was Jimmy speaking on that earlier today at his press conference.
You get paid by how many hits you get, okay? And I think if you know the Manning family, I would bet that, and I don't know Arch at all, okay? I bet he stays in college 2 years, so that's, I don't even think that's worth discussing.
Okay, that's a far different cry from what Colin Cowherd described as the biggest What did he say? It wasn't even a kept secret. It was just like the biggest open secret in all of the South is that Jimmy Haslam's interested. This is what you have to say if you're Jimmy Haslam right now. This is how you speak if you're Jimmy Haslam right now. This is the conversation you have to have if you're Jimmy Haslam right now. But the idea that he didn't even focus on for next year, it's like, yeah, Arch is going to be in there for two more seasons, which, by the way, I believe in him. I believe that's an accurate statement. But did Jimmy go around telling everyone that 2 weeks ago? Or is that something that Jimmy just came to the conclusion of himself? Like, did the Manning family call up Jimmy Haslam and say, hey, listen, we like you, Jimmy. We do. But if you think you're tanking for a quarterback at number one overall and it's Arch, don't do that to yourself. Apparently, they hang out all the time. Apparently, they're good friends. Did the Manning family give him a sense of, hey, please don't do that if this is what you're trying to do? If you're thinking about going down this road, stop. The stop sign's up immediately. Don't do that because Arch is staying for two more seasons. Arch is going to play one more year at Texas, make $6.5 million in NIL, and then he's going to play another season after that, probably make $10 to $12 million in NIL. And because he's got the Manning name, he'll be fine. The $20 million he'll make in his college career is going to be more than enough to offset the idea that he'll miss out on a one more year of a big-time payday. He needs the work, he needs the experience, and everything else in between. It's something that just got people all hot and bothered last week, and I thought it was interesting, not only that Haslam was asked about it, but that Haslam just directly responded to it and basically stamped it down. All right, one more other thing I want to get to. We got quick hits coming up in about 10 minutes. We also have G. Bush joining us at 3 o'clock. G's going to join us from 3 to 6, and then I'll be back solo from 6 to 7. I am sweating immensely out here. Earl is over there in the corner, looks pristine, looks like he has the man right now, have you ever sweat ever? I have no idea. I'm sweating bullets. Jake, you can attest to this. This is ridiculous. I look like I just ran a marathon.
Yeah, it's really bad out here.
Oh, my gosh. We're going to talk to Coach Riz at 4 o'clock. Well, I talked to Coach about an hour ago, and I was like, so what do you want to focus in on when we talk? Like, what are you focusing on for this practice in particular? He's like, well, I want to see what they do in the heat. I want to see, they had pads on yesterday for the first time, so they got a little bit used to that again. This will be day two of that, but then I want to see what they do in the heat. And I'm fascinated as well because I'm having a hard time sitting here talking to you guys in the heat. How are they out there running, doing athletic things, right? I mean, listen, I'm acting like it's 108 out here. I think my app on my phone said it's like 87, but I'm telling you, I'm sweating bullets right now. It's ridiculous. All right, 216-474-0092. One more thing I want to get to before we get to quick hits coming up in about 10 minutes or so. Mary Kay Cabot was on earlier today on Baskin and Phelps, and she alluded to the idea whether or not this is a make-or-break season for Stefanski and Barry, and we can tie that into the Haslam convo as well. Here we go.
This is a fact-finding mission this year to see if they have their quarterback of the future on the roster. They, of course, have those two first-round picks next year, and they are uniquely poised to select a quarterback in next year's stronger QB class. So I don't necessarily think that they're holding their feet to the fire this year. I think this is a season in which they're trying to find out if maybe Kenny Pickett can be their at least medium-term answer. What can Dillon Gabriel do for them? What can Shador do? So I don't necessarily think they're going to look at this year as a make or break season for Kevin or even Andrew at all.
And I'll give the regard, and Mary Kay is singing the same tune as well, is that they are consistent across the board and that being their messaging. There's fans like me and you who want to see Shador come out there, win the job, and then just be the quarterback for the next 10 years, and we don't have to worry about the quarterback situation. And on top of it, we get bonus picks next year in the first round that we can use for skill position players. There are people like myself that believe that's a realistic possibility if things break a certain way. Is it the expected possibility? No, but it's a realistic possibility. I think it's interesting that the Browns themselves, and then you hear it with Mary Kay Cabot as well, they're singing the tune, and they have been consistently now. Jimmy Haslam singing that as well earlier today, the idea that this is basically a gap year of sorts. This is a year. Mary Kay called it a fact-finding mission. That's a nice way to dress it up. This is a year where you find out a little bit more about players, you find out a little bit more about guys who can be here long-term, and then you keep things moving. For me, I'll take the excitement of trying to see if I can hit on one of those lottery tickets that is a quarterback, because that'll keep me coming back. But they're clear about their messaging, and Haslam stamped that down today as well. Quick hits with Jake when he joins us next right here on Afternoon Drive. I was joking with Earl. I might be the first radio host to ever just die on the air. And if that happened, hey, we'd go viral. But then we'd be like, Jake, what, she didn't get the cameras in like an odd spot for me just to drop dead on the air. And
yeah.
That's not great.
We would have video evidence for sure.
Yeah, you have, you at least have something. You have some just falling down.
I think the video helps it go viral, though.
No, that's what I'm saying.
So, yeah.
No, it definitely would. And then what happens in that moment? I fall down. Do you here's the okay. If I pass out because I get too hot and I'm sweating too much,
yeah,
I need you to hop in and carry the show. Don't worry about me. I'll be fine. And if I'm not fine, that's okay too. Someone else will figure that out. I need you to keep the show going, okay?
Yeah, I would have an oh crap moment there for about 20 seconds, and then I'd just try my best to take over.
You wouldn't take over. Yeah, I know you wouldn't do it.
I would have that moment where I'd be like, I should do something. My co-host has just passed out, or the host has just passed out, but then I would try my best to keep this show afloat.
All right. Well, we can try our best now. Again, G. Bush joining us in about 20 minutes here. We are in Berea. We are watching them start to practice. A lot of special team stuff. I haven't even seen Shedeur Sanders yet. I know you said he's out in the field somewhere. I haven't been able to locate him. So we're a little bit of ways, but we're about to get this thing going, and we're about to have all the reaction you could ever want under the sun. We'll have it all right here. But now, as we always do at this time, it's time for Quick Hits.
From the latest news and rumors around the sports world,
go Angel, Angel,
to the sound bites you need to hear,
hurry.
It's Quick Hits.
All right, we're going to start off. I don't know if you guys talked about this or not yesterday, but I didn't get a chance to. The Adam Sandler movie, I did watch it.
Happy Gilmore 2.
Very disappointing. I liked it. I'm not going to say I didn't like it. I liked it, but it got to a spot where the first hour of the movie, so actually we broke it up in two different spots, okay? We had 45 minutes. We were in Boston in the morning on Sunday, and my kid had kind of calmed down a little bit, and we had time to kill before we were going to drive to the airport, about 45 minutes. We put on the movie because I'd been dying to watch it. Everybody had been talking about it, and so we put it on, and for like 45 minutes, I was like, this is pretty good. I like this. I was like, John Daly can't act, but I'm enjoying the cameos. I liked how they did the flashbacks because it kind of explained some scenes to my wife because she hadn't ever seen Happy Gilmore, the original movie. So like, I thought they did a good job of doing that. And then we went, and so we took a break, right? And we got in the car, and then we got in the airplane, and then we got in the car, and then we got home. And then all of a sudden, we put the movie back on. It was like a six-hour break in between doing all that. And we watched the rest of the movie. And it was like the perfect break in between the movie being good and the movie jumping the shark. Mm. And then all of a sudden, the Maxi Tour stuff got in play. And it was like this big competition against golfers, real golf. And it just went sideways. And it just lost me.
Yeah, Nick and I didn't touch on it yesterday, but on Friday we did previewing the movie, so you said the movie was kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
And I disappointed Nick, probably will disappoint you, because I have not seen the original Happy Gilmore. So I have not seen Happy Gilmore 2.
No, so I'm not one of those guys, though. You need to know this about me. I think it's important you know this about me. What year were you born?
2001.
2001. The movie was made in 1996.
Yep.
I don't expect you to have watched a movie made in 1996. There will be a lot of people that'll be in this spot that will expect you to watch movies that were before your time. I used to hate, and I watched all sorts of movies before my time. I like all sorts of movies from the 80s. I do, but I used to hate when people would be like, you have to watch that movie because it's from 1984, 5 years before you're born, but it's such a classic. You have to. No, I don't.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Well, I appreciate that approach to things. I think what I've heard most about Happy Gilmore 2 is it just sounds like it's one long TikTok with all the cameos and the storyline jumps in it. That's the way I've heard it described, and
yeah.
I wonder if that's just really what it is.
I'd be happier if they didn't make it as opposed to making it.
Mm.
That was the takeaway there.
I think that's telling.
I would have been happier had it just not been made. I will not rewatch this movie at all. If it would have just been the first hour, I think it would have been good. I think I would have really enjoyed it. But it really jumped the shark for me in that second half. It's not that I hated it. I'm not here to poo-poo it completely. But do I wish Adam Sandler would have just left Happy Gilmore alone? Yeah, I kind of do.
Omaha!
All right, Raiders defensive tackle Christian Wilkins was recently released after only playing 5 games due to a season-ending foot injury. Well, Adam Schefter was on the Pat McAfee show and revealed some more information.
from speaking to people inside the locker room, I think what everybody's dancing around and tiptoeing around is the fact that when you speak to people there inside the locker room, they say that Christian playfully went to kiss a teammate on top of his head, and those same people said that that player took offense to it. So that's what everybody's been dancing around and tap dancing around, an incident in the locker room where he allegedly playfully kissed a teammate on top of his head. That teammate felt offended by it. And that's what a lot of this talk and speculation that people have just been floating around out there is about.
All right, JP, what do you make of this situation with Christian Wilkins?
Not buying it. That wasn't what happened.
No?
Wasn't what happened. Mm. Now, there's rumors on the streets that there was something entirely different that happened. I'm not here to go ahead and put that out there. Because, I mean, I might get sued if I do that. And I just don't want to get sued over Christian Wilkins, of all people. But the reality is that you don't get kicked off of teams and have your contract voided for that amount of money when you're that good of a player for kissing somebody on the forehead. Like, I'm not saying it's workplace appropriate, okay? There's a lot those players do that aren't workplace appropriate that goes on because they're football players and it's just an understood setting and environment. I also understand that if you kiss somebody on the forehead, even as a football player, they're definitely not going to take kindly to it. But there's a lot worse that could have been done there, and there's a lot worse that I believe was done. A lot worse makes it sound like he's like some heinous person or something attached to that. But like the reality is that it was more than kissing someone on the forehead.
Yeah, and I think if you're the Raiders, you have the foot injury to fall back to. But this story from Schefter, just I kind of want to know context of what the situation was and why he even did this. And I don't think we'll ever know those details.
Why
but just
would
a
you
very...
want context of that? You don't want context of
because
that.
Because what? It's such a strange thing to do inside of an NFL locker room that I'm wondering why he even did it.
Because it didn't happen.
And that could very well be.
So here's what happened. Somebody had to – they sat around in a meeting room and they had to come up with some sort of, hey, this is what we're going to tell people happened, okay? The excuse we're going to go with, but it's got to be believable enough that when Adam Schefter says it on Pat McAfee's show, people laugh about it, but they also say to themselves, yeah, I'd probably kick him off too. Where we disagree in this is that if I was in charge of making up whatever this was, I would have gone a little bit harder. Because I don't think kissing somebody on the forehead should get you kicked off of a football team. I do think it should be like it should get you fired if you're Jack in accounting and you kiss your person right next to you. Yeah, that probably should get you fired. Probably can't do that in a real workplace, but football and football players, it's not a real workplace. It's just a little bit different, and so I don't think that it would be.
Omaha!
All right, do we see who was being carted off the field there? I don't think it was in any sort of bad way. It seemed like almost like heat exhaustion or something there. Did you see who that was?
No, I missed the whole thing.
They had the towel over their face. I haven't seen any reports on it or anything like that, but somebody definitely left by like our side over here. And they didn't have their jersey on, and they had the towel over the face, so we couldn't exactly see what was going on. Hopefully everything's okay. That's Martin Emerson. Oh, really?
Martin Emerson.
What did they say?
Down at practice, cart taking him off from Mike Garafolo. I just see a picture, defensive players. I see Jerry Jeudy in the picture as well, surrounding the cart.
Right now. So Garafolo is saying no weight on his left leg as he was helped to the cart. There's an important distinction I want to make for you guys here in this. So we just watched, it's right in front of us. We just watched, I guess it was MJ Emerson. He didn't have his jersey on, and he had the towel over his face. And I've interviewed MJ a couple times. I would know what he looks like just from We all know MJ Emerson, right? But he had the towel over his face as if, like, this is the worst day of my life. And the difference here, and what I want to point out for everyone, this was not like when Justin Fields left the field and everyone's like, he's being carted off. But the reality is that he hopped into a golf cart and he was sitting next to somebody that was on the PR team of the Jets and they were making jokes as everyone left and was like, oh, he's being carted off. No. Technically he was being carted off, but the reality of the situation is that he was more just a golf cart took him to go ahead and see what was wrong with his foot, but he himself was fine. That was a convenience play because they didn't want him to go ahead and walk on what could be a busted up toe, what turned out to be a busted up middle toe. They didn't want him walking 500 yards to the tent. So they said, get on the golf cart, we'll take you there, but it's not that serious. That, what we saw with MJ Emerson, was different. What we saw with MJ Emerson right there looked like somebody that had seriously injured themselves and was seriously upset with the outcome of whatever happened. When we get more info, and I don't want to speculate too hard, when we get more info, we'll let you know. But that did not look, that wasn't somebody hopping on a golf cart next to some PR member of the Browns saying, hey, it's going to be all right. We'll save you 500 steps. That looked like somebody that, again, towel over the face. You're like, what happened here?
Yeah, and Mary Kay adding to it as well. MJ Emerson being carted off with a very painful left knee injury. So Mike Garafolo adding that you can't put much pressure on it. I think you're exactly right. He didn't hop in the passenger seat of a cart and got carted off the field. A little bit more rough of a scene than that, where he has the towel over his head, seems a little distraught as he's carted off this.
The real definition of being carted off, okay?
Yeah,
exactly. That was the real definition of it, where you see him in the back and then he's being taken away. Now, the problem with that, there's a couple things. One, MJ Emerson, I believe, and I will believe, not that I'll be talking about this on the day that I die, but I believe until the day I die that MJ Emerson was playing hurt last year. Okay? That's just how I see it. He was too good in previous years. We know that he had nicks and little bruises here and there last year. I feel like that was more substantial than he ever let on. I feel like he's the type of player that would try to play through as much as he possibly can. We've watched him be so good. To have him be as bad as he was last year, it's the only thing that makes any sense to me. So I was thinking that this year was going to be a big bounce-back year. For a lot of players on the defense, when you only have 4 interceptions as a team last year, which was dead last in the NFL, I figured some of the ball hawks we have on this team, whether that's Denzel, whether that's MJ Emerson, and Denzel was good last year, I'm not pointing it to him, but whether it was any of those guys, the cornerbacks, any of the safeties, any of those type of guys, you just figured they'd have a better year than what they had last year. Offense being better was going to always help that out if they are in fact better. But ultimately, it was going to be guys like MJ Emerson, guys like Greg Newsome, instead of looking like they were playing through injuries and not playing 100% last year, looking 100%. And so if MJ Emerson is actually out and down for any stretch of this season, that is obviously disastrous news for the upcoming year. But if he's actually injured right now in this camp and he has to miss, I mean, it's a left knee injury, who knows? But that's not good for this defense. No other way to look at it. All right, let's continue on with quick hits.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, one more, Jax. We're going to go to... Well, I want to talk about this one, and this one will be a little self-serving. Brian Sandberg passed away at the age of 65 yesterday. He did not beat his battle with cancer. What I think is interesting about Rhino is that he is one of those players, Jake, and again, this is a player that was... You were born in 2001, we established.
Yeah.
So you missed all of Ryan Sandberg's career, but you also missed a time when WGN and TBS were on every household in America, and so there were a lot of Braves fans and Cubs fans all across the country. Not that they loved the team, but the team was on a lot, and so Rhino was one of those players that everyone just kind of liked. And I grew up in Chicago. I grew up a Cubs fan. So, like, there's an association there for myself. He was my older brother's favorite player. I probably met Ryan Sandberg maybe, I don't know, 15 times in life. Just a great guy. Always signing autographs for kids, that type of guy. But just one of those players that there's not a person that could ever hate his game. When you watched him play the game, you're like, this is how baseball should be played.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredibly sad news. And like you said, JP, I'm not going to pretend to know everything there is to his career, but nobody's going to say a bad story about him as a baseball player, about him as a human being. And when the news came out yesterday and you just look at his age, as you mentioned, the battle with cancer that he was in, just 65 years old, it's a tragic story, but a legacy lives on with him as a Cubs player and a great.
No question about it, man. Baseball loses a big one. It's been a bad week and a half for just people dying. Like, famous people just dying.
Yeah, Ozzy Osbourne, Hulk Hogan.
Jeez. All right, and that is Quick Hits. We come on back. G. Bush is going to join us. How far does the Class A situation go? We'll also weave in and out with some of the reaction from MJ Emerson. We'll probably hit with that with G. Bush off the rip, and then we'll go from there. It's Afternoon Drive. Jonathan Peterlin with you guys right here on The Fan.